Welcome to Movie Crush, a production of iHeartRadio.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to Movie Crush. Charles W. Chuck Bryant here at the home studio, Pont City Market, Atlanta, Georgia. Friday interview edition. Folks, I got a comedian back in here. It's been a minute, I feel like, since I've had a stand-up swing through the office. But the great Matt Bronger came through. Matt, I have known very casually for a little while. I met him a few years ago at Max Fun Con, where I meet a lot of comics every summer. And Matt was there the same year that Kyle Kinane, previous guest, Kyle Kinane, was there. And we had a couple of really fun nights just getting slammered and hanging out and joking around and having a good time. And Matt's a really good dude. He comes to Atlanta every couple of years, I feel like, here at the Laughing Skull Comedy Lounge. And he's just great. Really, really funny. Matt's a good dude to boot. And he has a brand new or newish, a few months old, comedy special on Amazon Prime called Finally Live in Portland. And Matt's from Portland, and he tells a bit about the making of this and just sort of going out and shooting it himself and getting it on Amazon Prime, which is great. But it's awesome. You should definitely check that on Amazon Prime. Matt Bronger, Finally Live in Portland. And he picked An American Werewolf in London from the great John Landis, the classic 1981 comedy horror or horror comedy film, depending on how you're feeling that day. And we had a good time talking about that and stand-up and his journey and his career. And here we go with Matt Bronger on An American Werewolf in London. So I know where you're from, but for the benefit of the listeners, you're from Portland, right?
Uh-huh. Are we? We're going now?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, great.
It's very casual.
Cool, great.
There's no big
just
setup.
Checking. Not that I really care, but I was just like, oh, I don't know.
Right.
Yeah, but you're going.
Like you would leave after an hour and be like, I don't think he ever pushed the record. That's what a weird thing.
He just wanted to hang out.
Like okay. He shot a video with me years ago and never did anything with that either. Nice. Yeah. I think Chuck's just in love with me. Yeah, so you're from Portland.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And how old are you?
I am 44.
Okay, so you're a little younger than me, but probably had a pretty similar experience growing up in the 70s and 80s as far as like movies and stuff go.
Yeah, for sure.
We always like to get a sense of like what – I'm always obsessed with like sort of what people's young adult life was through film.
Yeah. They're the formative cinematic years.
Yeah.
In a sense. Yeah.
Because I grew up in a religious household, so I was sort of had to like wait on the R-rated stuff.
Oh, really?
Not so religious where they were like, you know, you can't do these things, but – you know, I was like 12 before
sure.
I could watch R-rated movies.
Oh, okay.
And stuff like that.
That's probably pretty close to me. I mean, my parents would take me to art house films that were like brutal, like with sex and violence
yeah.
and stuff sometimes. Just on and off. But like I wouldn't go – like I couldn't go see, you know, like a Death Wish movie or something
right.
like that. Like but I was actually thinking about this on the way over in terms of my movie going history because my parents would take me to – like I said, art house films and like the big ones, of mm-hmm. course, you know, E.T. and,
sure.
you know, Stand By Me and all these giant movies that were also good.
Yeah.
But like my dad would also take me to all the James Bond movies and yeah. all the Schwarzenegger movies because uh-huh. that was like our thing.
Yeah.
And it was fun because my dad is not like a, you know, he was an imposing guy, but he wasn't like, oh, I'm so tough,
uh-huh.
you know, or anything like that. So that it was just pure. I saw it for the ice cream it was
right.
back then, which was – I feel I'm lucky that
yeah.
way because I feel like some kids grew up going to those movies and they're like, well, that's – if you're not that, you're not a man.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
If you're not
sure.
commando,
right.
what's the point of you?
Right.
you know?
yeah.
So
yeah.
I would see all those movies and then would go see – art house stuff too with my parents.
That's
and,
awesome. They had good yeah, taste
it was,
then.
It was great. I mean, some of them I hated, mm-hmm. especially like you know because they would. That's beside the point, but like plays as well,
right?
You know about like you know the troubles in Ireland and stuff, and just what it. This is so depressing. But I remember there was a movie called I want to say it was called Willis and Burke. That was about two explorers.
I don't think I've ever.
They
heard
were
that.
British,
uh-huh.
and they'd gone way out. into the wilderness.
They sort of like, the Lewis and Clark of Britain.
Britain. And yeah. The whole movie was interposed between them dying, like just starving, yeah. dying of disease, skinny as all hell.
Yeah.
And cut to Victorian England. Everyone's constantly toasting them.
Right.
To Burke and Willis.
Oh, and their big –
they're, you know, yeah, like – because everyone else is just like, right. yeah, go, you know. And it was kind of – and they finally find one of them. There's like one guy left from the right. whole expedition. And he's just a skeleton. And, yeah. and after the movie, we were driving home and I just started ripping my parents a new one. Uh-huh. And they're just laughing. My dad's pounding the steering wheel. I'm like, why did you take me to that? I'm a child.
Right.
This is horrible. You know.
How old were you?
Oh, I wasn't that – I was probably like 11 or something. But it was more like I'm not – not that I'm ruined, but like that was so depressing.
Yeah.
That was the point of that movie, you
yeah.
know.
And probably kind of boring for a kid that age.
It did just go on and on and on for sure. Yeah.
I'm always jealous when people had parents that were into culture and media and stuff because I don't know what it is. My parents – I mean they love their movies here and there, but like – I've famously told everyone, my dad, the last movie he saw in the theater was Tarzan with Bo Derek. Like, that's literally the last time he's been in a movie theater.
Amazing.
So they weren't like saying, here, son, like, you should see this. This is cool. And they probably still don't know what the words art house mean, like, uh-huh. combined together.
Sure. Okay.
Which, I mean, my mom's a painter. She's an artist. So it's interesting. They mm-hmm. just weren't into movies. Like,
well, I think it's kind of growing up in Portland. Like, my parents came from the Midwest. And
yeah.
they moved to Portland. They found a church that was pretty progressive.
Uh-huh.
And they were brought together by kind of their progressivism and how they wanted to kind of be more open-minded to that kind of stuff. And there's still a great repertory movie theater called the Cinema 21 in Portland
that I grew up
going to. And uh-huh. There were a couple others and there was still that – you could kind of find these things.
Yeah.
And it's still there. It's been much more you know, monetize, like they're bigger, yeah. they're nicer and everything.
Right.
But it's cool that there's still that accessibility to some of this stuff coming up.
Yeah, what was Portland like in the 70s and 80s?
Well, I would say 80s. We moved there in 78 when
okay.
I was like 4.
Right.
But like it was great, but it was just kind of it was just really kind of plain, honestly.
Yeah.
And you would go – I remember a lot of mall culture.
Right,
a lot of
course.
If you use that term, yeah. a lot of just, you know, hanging out, skateboarding,
yeah.
that
right.
kind of stuff. But yeah, it's funny. I don't really have a lot to compare to. But there was a lot of art, modern, I would say, kind of trash art influence for sure.
Right.
Kind of like how – I would say that the L.A. scene gave birth to, like, you know, Pee Wee Herman and
right.
kind of that kind of – I would say like Talking Heads, the – what was it? True Stories look,
uh-huh.
you know, that the kind of nouveau cowboy thing.
Yeah, yeah.
With Portland, you had – I remember when Stop Making Sense came out.
Uh-huh.
Everyone saw it in the movie theaters.
Yeah.
Or a lot of people my parents knew and stuff, and that was like a major – thing because that was the art that was being made there.
Right.
You saw a lot of – there was a thing downtown called the Electronic 24-Hour Church of Elvis, which was behind
oh, wow.
a glass pane.
Uh-huh.
And it had like a revolving Elvis head and a keyboard, like
right.
a Commodore 64 that was sticking out of the wall of
yeah.
this building. And you would go and say, like, do you want to get married? Or you'd press Y and the girl would press Y and two like plastic rings come out. It was a coin thing. But
oh,
it was
cool.
like an art exhibit.
Right.
And that claymation was born in Portland. So
right.
I remember we knew the guy who had made the And She Was video
uh-huh.
for Talking Heads.
Yeah, love that.
And knew the guys who made just these claymation movies, and then California Raisins happened, and then it was the biggest thing since
oh, sure.
sliced bread. It was like boom, it was everywhere. So it was
a weird time.
It was a weird time. But we had our little record store that we'd go to and just buy whatever record where the person looked the craziest on the front or whatever.
Yeah.
And so I discovered all these groups and
oh,
and stuff.
For sure.
So I mean, I would just say it was a really good place to grow up.
Yeah.
Generally speaking.
That's awesome.
You know,
I just started. I got a turntable again finally after many, many years without one.
Yeah.
And started. I hate saying collecting vinyl. That sounds so like I started buying records again.
Sure. Yeah.
And went to the record store last week the first time in. Jesus, 25 years to like thumb through records,
yeah.
like legitimately
mm-hmm.
to buy. And I had such a, like, I almost started crying.
Ha.
It was such a visceral experience.
Yeah. It's nice. I mean, I think
I was just zapped right back.
Yeah, so people just want to be able to hold look at it.
Yeah,
I own a bunch of records, and I'll always find like the local record stores. Even if I don't buy a record, I like just going, kind of pouring through and stuff. And quite honestly, I buy them less and less because they're heavy to like transport home.
Sure,
I used to sell records on the road, and it's just like, oh god, lugging that huge bag of pure weight. You know, but it's fantastic to just to go. My biggest pet peeve are record stores that only sell new records.
Yeah.
It's like, well, what's the point of you?
Yeah,
you haven't
yeah.
curated anything.
Yeah.
You've just checked a bunch of boxes. You found a trendy thing.
Right.
And
180 grand vinyl.
And it takes money. I love the ones that have the old records, and there are some that I found lately that I'm just like, whoa. You know, they're just.
I bought a mix the other day. I did buy a few new pressings of old records.
And I'm not against buying new records.
Sure.
I'll do that too. But if that's all you have, you don't even have a small used section. You
right.
have something.
No, yeah, for sure.
That's my point.
Yeah. Well, you're around this weekend. You should go to Wax and Facts.
Okay.
Or Wuxtree. Those are both pretty good.
Okay. Write those down.
Yeah. That's good stuff.
Cool.
The guy at Wuxtree I've been going to since I was in high school, and it's just the tropiest trope of record store owner guy. You know? It's like if Michael Stipe walked into his shop, he couldn't be less interested, you know. I'm trying to imagine anyone that would excite him or anything that would excite him. He's great, though.
Okay.
And I just sort of, you know, I play into that whole thing. I try to get him to smile every time I'm in there.
Of course. You should bring him the dumbest size ice cream sundae you can buy. Like something absurd with one spoon.
Oh, there used to be a Baskin Robbins like right next door, but it's gone now. That would have been perfect.
It would make him even madder.
Right.
He's not going to throw this away. Right. Going to make the whole – we're going to get flies now.
I'm lactose intolerant, you know.
I mean, I have high cholesterol, man.
Right. Did you have brothers and sisters? Or?
No, just
okay.
me.
Mm-hmm. I gotcha. What about comedy? When did you start kind of getting interested in that?
Yeah, it was.
Did you listen to the records and stuff?
Yeah,
or?
I always had the George Carlin's Class Clown was the first one I heard as
Sam
a kid.
Here, man.
Yeah, incredible.
Remember that cover with him on the stool?
Uh huh.
Acting like he's picking his nose.
Sure. Yeah. No shirt, but a jean jacket.
Yeah. Exactly.
Or a jean shirt that's open. I don't know.
Yeah, one of the two.
Whatever it was. I would listen to my parents' comedy albums a lot, and just it just. As I got older, like watching – you know, sneaking downstairs to watch Saturday Night Live through the banister. My parents couldn't see me. And then
– I did the same thing. I had a banister and everything.
Hilarious. And then watching it, you know, when I was like in high school and stuff and going to school. And I could always and I can still do this. I can almost recite people's routines word for word after I see them because it's just the cadence of them stays in my mind. So I would go to school and like do whole SNL sketches with just say them to friends and, you know.
So was that like your early training?
Not the whole thing, but I would just remember kind of.
Yeah.
And then when I got into acting and liked doing that and like doing funny plays. But doing funny plays was always – it was just like it's not the same. This is – everything's too big. There's no nuance. And
high school stuff?
Yeah.
High school drama?
High school and even college. You know, what they call, classic comedies. It's like, it's all very broad. So,
yeah, like what would that be? I mean, stuff like Noises Off or?
Yeah, Noises Off. You know, I did a play called Beyond Therapy that was just and it was just, there was a you know, like Oscar Wilde stuff, the importance of being earnest and stuff.
Oh,
it's just – it's how you play it, obviously.
Right.
And Noises Off is hilarious too. But I gravitated much more to like when Kids in the Hall came out. I was like, oh, well, this is it.
Yeah.
This is what I like. And then
– And The State.
And The State and all this SNL stuff I saw and then I
– So mainly sketch was like your first interest?
Yeah. Well, I didn't really know. I'd just be kind of like, oh, I like comedy. Because I still loved stand-up and stuff. And when I got to Chicago out of college, I started just taking improv classes. A bunch of other waiters and other servers did it. And then I started doing open mics, and then that's how I made friends with all the comics that I kind of came up with. And
now, who was that? Who was there then?
Kyle Kinane.
Oh, yeah. I got Kyle in
there. Kumail, Pete Holmes. Hannibal was a little bit after us. TJ was a little bit after us. Emily DeRees's, John Roy,
Cameron,
Nate Craig.
She was later.
Cameron was later.
Yeah.
Cameron was later.
She's young.
She's young. Well, she's like, she likes to rib me that like when she started out, she's like, nobody would shut up about you. And I was like,
oh,
okay,
really?
That's nice. Yeah.
Just well, say it was like, it,
I, it's funny.
Again.
I kind of left Chicago like, yeah, I'm a big dog. And I got to LA and was no one for like 3 years.
Right.
You know? That's just how it works. It's that kind
and you
of
went
thing.
Straight to LA for, you never did a New York stint?
Nope. Nope. I was in college in New York, but just about a north. No, they're about half an hour north of the city.
Okay.
Yeah. So
yeah, Chicago's always had a really good scene, I feel like.
It's just a great place to start out. I always tell comics if they, you know, just – if you want to just take a couple years and be in a good scene and just get good.
Mm-hmm.
Just do it as much as you can.
Right.
Before you get to New York or L.A. And you get in front of people and you're not necessarily ready.
Right.
And that's not to say you can't. Get good there too.
Sure.
If you live there, sure. You don't have to move somewhere else.
Right.
You know, but it was Chicago for me was a perfect place to do that, especially because we had one comedy club and they wouldn't let us in.
Right.
So we would just do bars.
Oh, yeah.
Do our own shows. Uh-huh. And that's just all I knew until I started doing stand up clubs and was like, oh, this is real different. But it was great.
Yeah.
To kind of just jump in feet first once I got to LA.
Right.
You know.
So you and Kyle have been buddies for a while then.
Yeah, yeah. We moved to L.A. together. We lived together
cool.
for 3 years.
Mm-hmm. That's great.
Yeah.
He was on pretty early on when I launched this show just as a passion project, and he came in and talked about Big Trouble in Little China.
Ah, perfect.
And,
yeah.
And, yeah, he's such a good guy.
Yeah, he is.
It's good seeing him.
He is, yeah.
Do you guys still hang out much? Or?
Oh, totally. Yeah. We're both on the road a lot, but he for the longest, Kyle would just – come back to town and just be in a bar by himself, and I wouldn't even be when
right.
he was back. I was like, call me, man,
right.
you know? But he just kind of had that thing of like, if I'm off the road, I want to be alone.
Right.
You know? And
sure.
I never took it personally, but lately, the last couple of years, he's always making a point to reach out.
Oh, that's
so
good.
It's like, so we, not that we ever disconnected, but
yeah.
we definitely reconnected.
Yeah, people go through their phases.
Yeah, exactly.
Mm-hmm. That's cool.
He had his, you know, smallest lighthouse operator thing for a while, and then I had to let that happen.
He totally could be a lighthouse operator.
Yeah, for sure.
Do you probably live on the east side of LA like everyone else?
I do.
Okay.
I have since 2003. That's where Kyle and I moved.
Yeah. When I lived there, I lived in Los Feliz.
That's where I live.
For a little while, Santa Monica and Vermont. And then when I met, well, my wife and our friends, and when we decided to like be more than friends, we moved in together in Eagle Rock. And this was in like 2000-ish, 2001.
Yeah.
And now Eagle Rock is just crazy.
Yeah.
Like busy and just different.
It is. And I feel like Eagle Rock is a lot more, family-ish residential.
Yeah.
Nearby Highland Park.
Right.
That is hipster explosion.
Oh, is it?
Where Los Feliz is kind of, it's definitely, you know, everyone wants to live there because of livability quality.
Yeah.
But it's not, I wouldn't call it necessarily incredibly hip.
No.
It is, but like not like
nah, – not like it was
– Silver Lake
yeah.
was it, and then it jumped to Highland Park, which
yeah.
is – now Highland Park is just
– right.
It's just crazy.
Yeah.
You know, going down York Boulevard, you have to go one street up to just go down side streets because it's always just cars just slow,
really?
slow. Yeah. It's insane.
Yeah. I still hang out in Los Feliz when I go because there's a wine bar over there I really like.
Covell?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Barcoville.
Great place.
It's great.
Mm-hmm.
Sean there is like the nicest guy ever.
Yeah. Yeah.
But last time I was there, they had like the homeless village of tents.
Yep.
Right there.
Right
in
there.
Los Feliz.
Yep.
And it was such just a mind blow experience for me of like sadness and.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was just weird.
It's crazy. It's all over the city with the exception of places like WeHo where the cops will kick them right out.
Right.
Kind of thing where it's kind of like. Yeah, that's nice for your neighborhood, but kind of this is at the same time humanity.
So I know.
It's like I don't know. I think the city's working as fast as it can
yeah.
to kind of build some of these buildings for them.
Right.
But it's just – and it's – you know, L.A. is probably where it's worse, but
right.
it's bad everywhere.
Yeah.
Everywhere. Like I
yeah,
feel like –
San Francisco's really
yeah,
tough place
it's
right
insane.
Now.
It's insane. Portland's the same thing. It's,
yeah.
It's just this – we've reach this bubble and it just won't
pop. I know.
You know,
it feels
won't.
Like a – I mean, it's always been a problem, but it feels like a fucking epidemic.
Yeah.
Now. It's
yeah.
very sad.
Yeah.
Well, let's bring it down even more. What else can we talk about?
It's awful. Sad things.
So you go to L.A. You start off – I guess you're in your what, like mid-20s at this point?
L.A., I was
– Or late 20s?
I was 29 when we moved to LA and quickly turned 30. So basically, let's just say 30.
What's it like to – like, I know everyone that comes up together is always very supportive of one another, but like, what's the reality of professional jealousies and competitiveness and stuff like that?
Yeah, it's kind of always there. But it's – at the same time, hopefully you get it in your head that it's better that it's your friend than someone else rather than go, why not me?
Right.
You know, it's – there are things you get frustrated about and comedy is just – it feels like crabs in a barrel so often where the ever-present – how'd you get that?
Yeah.
You know? At the same time where I remember when I saw that, like, you know, Kyle is a bigger comedian than me. And
as far as just stand-up goes?
I feel like in terms of popularity, in terms of like just let's put like how many in terms of how he sells on the road versus me kind of thing. You know, that's how I would judge it. I mean, I don't give a shit, you know.
But you were also on Mad TV for how many seasons?
One.
Oh, really?
So it was canceled. Yeah.
You were at the very end.
Oh, that did nothing for me. That
really?
Yeah. And that's one of those things that, like, it's nice to have that credit, but since it was only half a season and then it was canceled and it was over.
Oh, I didn't think I knew that.
Didn't have a chance to kind of spread my wings, even though they gave me a lot of stuff, which was awesome. It was like, it's one of those things where for years, and this hasn't happened in a long time, but because my Wikipedia page lists all the people I impersonated on that show, and side note, I was one of two white men, the whole cast.
Right.
So we had a lot of pop culture ground
to
cover.
So you just divided it up basically?
They would just pick one of us, you know? Like, Matt's taller than Eric. You be John Mayer.
Right.
Me. I look nothing in the world like John Mayer. So like, you know, I remember going on – and this is funny. I remember going on morning show, you know, because usually when you do a club, you go do morning radio.
Do you have to do that here?
And no. It's awesome. I don't. Cool. But they had me in. It was so early. It was like something like – I was there at like 6 a.m. or something bananas. And this guy who's like who just is there, you know, they all they do is print stuff out. They don't know who you are. They go, well, we all know him from.
Right.
And that's nice.
Yeah.
But the guy who's supposed to prep me is like, all right, so they want you to do these impressions, this one. And I'm like, I don't do any impressions.
Right.
And he goes, but from Mad TV. I'm like, no, that was – yeah. Like 8 years ago, dude, and I had to do, you know, like Charlie Sheen and stuff and John Mayer. Those aren't – I did them like in the studio or on camera. I don't even know what the hell I did back then.
But you never considered yourself an impressionist or anything?
No. I mean I like when I auditioned for Mad TV, like you have to do two celebrity impressions. And one of mine was Vincent D'Onofrio on Law & Order CI. And all it was, he just messes with your stuff as he talks to you, which I love that on that show where you just pick crap up and you're like, put that down.
Right.
So you didn't? Did you rape her? What is this?
Right.
Mickey Mouse?
Yeah.
You know, like he would drive people insane. And so I would just do that for the executives and just move their stuff around and it would get a laugh.
Yeah.
You know, but anyway.
What was the other one?
That guy.
Do you remember?
Oh my God, what was it? I think it was like, maybe I think I might have done Wayne Newton, but he was like so Botox he couldn't move, and I kept falling over, and like still singing with a frozen face.
That's
but like,
good.
But mine were just really kind of abstract.
Yeah, yeah.
That's exactly him.
Uh-huh.
So when that guy was livid with me.
Yeah.
He was like, but it Wikipedia says,
right.
And I'm like, dude, you know anyone can put that in. It's not. This is not.
Yeah.
The Guinness Book of World Records. Right. It's not something you can check. And he's like, well, they're expecting it. And I'm just like, I don't care, man. And it was the point where I was like, do you want me to leave? And he's like, no. And they finally let me in. And the DJ did not even know that I'd gone through that with him.
Yeah.
He just was like, oh, no, bro. Okay, cool.
Uh-huh.
Didn't care.
Right.
But that other guy was just
don't care.
Maybe he wanted that as an impression.
Yeah, maybe so.
But so back to your original point, it's I don't have a lot of things that like, you know, like Dr. Samberly from Agent Carter. Some people know me from that.
Yeah.
The roundtable appearances on Chelsea Lately.
Uh-huh.
You know, it's just my work has been incredibly sporadic,
right?
Kind of thing. But I don't have like the you're Sam Malone,
right?
Kind of thing. You know,
is acting your like end game? Is that what you really are after? Or
I always want to do both.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, I want to do both. I've always wanted to do both. I'd like to do more, but you know, booking acting, and I've been pretty fortunate. It's like winning a scratch ticket.
Right.
It happens about that often.
Right.
About as often as you win like a $20 scratch ticket.
Yeah.
You know, and you buy a scratch ticket every 2 weeks or something.
Yeah.
You know, it's like they give you a chance to scratch the ticket.
Right.
So it's just I do my best to create as much material for myself,
mm-hmm.
but then that also has to get sold. So mm-hmm. I've sold plenty of stuff, but even if it goes to pilot, no one sees it
right.
until it goes to series.
Right.
So that's the big, you know, hidden truth that most people don't understand about
yeah.
us performers that try to self-generate is that, oh yeah, I'm trying.
Yeah.
Don't
yeah.
get me wrong.
Right.
But like it's getting hard. Your show sold and uh-huh. gone to series is incredibly hard. And then it'll, you know, the chance it gets canceled within the first year are very good.
Yeah.
You know, there was just a massacre just now last week where they just something like 10 shows.
Oh, really?
Uh-huh.
Wow.
So it's just you just kind of roll with the punches. I'm just like when you say is acting your end game? Sure. But I'm so fortunate to have stand up.
Right.
Because if I was just an actor, I don't know how people do it.
Yeah.
Just act. I really don't.
Yeah.
Know?
When it you had a new special out, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Finally live in Portland. It's on
okay.
Amazon Prime.
Right awesome. Now, when you're putting, I guess, putting together like an hour or so.
Sure.
What's that process like? Like, I don't want, you know, I know people don't like to talk about making the sausage too much. But like, how long of a period are you workshopping stuff?
Usually about a year and a half,
maybe
2 years to kind of get it just right.
Wow.
But then you know, with that one, I was kind of you just bang on doors and bang on doors, and then you finally get. And even if people are like, they want to make a special with you, but they can't do it for a year,
mm-hmm.
and you're like, this, I will be so tired of this material,
right?
That it won't be good
because that matters too, right?
Absolutely, you can wear it out.
Yeah.
I can for sure. I just reached a point where I'm like, I'm just going to shoot it myself,
right?
So I paid for it and shot it myself, and then
that's awesome.
I thanks, and then I partnered with the same people that made my special before,
uh-huh.
and then they sold it on a bunch of platforms. So the one before that I did with them, and they sold it to Comedy Central, then Netflix.
Mm-hmm.
But Comedy Central and Netflix aren't – they're not acquiring anymore.
Okay.
They only make their own stuff.
Gotcha.
So with this one, it was kind of across the board, and thank God that it went on Amazon Prime streaming, so anyone with Prime can just watch it.
Yeah,
now
for sure,
because that was my whole thing. I definitely have to make a living and make some money off it and stuff, but I just have to have it on something where someone can go click. There it is,
right?
You know, otherwise it's when your stuff is on various other networks, it'll be like it'll show twice,
right?
And then it won't. You know, you can pull it up online,
yeah.
but it's not. That
right.
same thing as being on your TV.
On your menu.
Yeah, on your menu.
Yeah, at all times. I haven't watched it yet because I'm coming Saturday and I didn't
cool.
want – I figured there would be some crossover.
No.
Oh, really?
There won't be.
Oh,
yeah. There's one off it that I occasionally bring out because I've kind of morphed a little bit into kind of a unification of the xenophobes in a sense.
Okay.
The misanthropes, I should say. Xenophobes is strong. But just – it's just about like, I want to reach out to people, but I don't like people, you know, kind of thing. but sometimes I'll throw that in if I feel like I want to connect with the audience more and stuff.
Yeah.
But with the exception of that bit, nothing.
Right.
Nothing. Because that one, Finally Live, I shot in 2016.
Oh, okay.
And
that's way retired.
I set it up with so many, networks that took months to look at it
uh-huh.
and loved it, and they're like, we can't find a spot, or we can put it up in a year.
Right.
Where it was just like, good Lord. And it finally went with
yeah.
Comedy Dynamics, but they also had a backlog. And so it still had to wait.
Yeah.
So in the meantime,
so
I wrote an hour and change after that,
uh-huh.
you know, an hour of which I've recorded for an album
right.
already.
Oh, cool.
Post this special.
Uh huh.
So,
wow.
Yeah. Just, it's kind of just, you know, it's been a long time since I did that special. And
yeah.
So, you know.
How many times a day are you writing in your little notebook?
All the time.
Yeah?
Yeah. I try.
Just seeds and of jokes and
basically,
observations.
Yeah. Ideas and thoughts. I mean, so much of comic, stand-up thinking is something you thought was funny, you know, years ago,
mm-hmm.
and you were like, oh, that's right. That's a thing.
Right.
Because you forget about, we dress it up in terms of performance, but everyone, thinks or notices or says a funny thing. And comics tend to take those, at least I do, memories and kind of just throw them away rather than go, oh, I should share this with people.
Right.
You know, because this is perfect.
Yeah.
So it's a lot of it's stuff like that.
And how much of a when you have a lot of I mean, it sounds silly to say when you got a lot of jokes written down.
Right.
But when you have a lot of material, how important is the assemblage into a whole? And not that – I mean, you don't really do like a theme kind of thing usually. But like how important is the 30 minutes or the hour and how it all works together and that chess puzzle?
Not too much. It's fun to just kind of move it all around.
Oh, yeah?
You know, if you can get things that are all thematic, fantastic.
Uh-huh.
But generally speaking, that's more kind of – you know, one person show territory,
right?
Which is nothing wrong with that.
Yeah, it's such a fine line sometimes.
If it's funny, it's funny. I mean, I'm not putting down one person shows, but you know, and it's like I feel like in England, they tend to make their hours thematic.
Yeah,
especially because everything revolves around Edinburgh.
Right.
So if you do Edinburgh, here's your hour. Mm-hmm. It can't be Matt Bronger live. It has to be Matt Bronger in Frustrated Man or whatever, which is great. That's fine. You know,
Matt Bronger is Frustrated.
I mean, I'm going to be I have a pin in a date at a theater in England, and they really want me to name it.
Yeah.
It's like, okay, fun. I like it to do that. I like to name my tours sometimes, so
sure.
I'll just do that. I'll take whatever tour name I'm doing at the time and call it that.
Right.
You know, because it's going to be from my perspective and everything.
Yeah.
It just won't have, you know, first act, second act.
Yeah,
yeah,
yeah. We did, for my other show, The Stuff You Should Know, we tour and stuff. And we did a tour of Britain a few years ago. And it was a little unsettling to see how reserved they are. And no one had prepared us for that. And it was, we just left the stage thinking like, man, we just shit the bed. And everyone was like standing ovation and like, you guys were so great.
Wow.
I'm like, man, you really like can't tell.
Yeah, that's wild.
I think the thing we notice most is they don't take to pandering like American audiences do.
Yeah, no.
Which, you know, you can always get up there and do a little bit of like, you know, city work and like shout out certain places. And we did that there and they were just sort of nodded. Like,
yes, that's a place.
Yeah, we mentioned a place right down the street and I thought, oh, man, this is going to kill.
Yeah.
Or we played the Smiths beforehand in Manchester and like no one noticed.
Of course
it's like,
not.
Oh, man, this is just not working.
Yeah.
This is not like going to Philly and like – you'd say the word cheesesteak and like people are going to start
either
booing or one
or
the other.
Right, yeah.
All right, well, I guess we can get to American Werewolf in London.
Woo!
Since we're in Britain already.
Yeah.
I watched this. Great pick, by the way.
I mean, I think it's – we were emailing about, you know, you were like, what's your favorite movie? And I was kind of like,
It's always a –
you know,
stupid question.
I don't necessarily have one, but it's, you know, if I got to throw a dart, like if I have to pick one that kind of checks maybe not all, but most of my boxes, that movie.
Yeah.
I think it's fantastic.
Yeah. 1981, directed by John, written and directed by John Landis. Released, interestingly, he was 30 years old when he did this.
God.
I'm obsessed now that I'm getting older. It's like looking at ages of people, like when they made their best work.
Have you seen the picture of the Traveling Wilburys and their names?
No. Oh, my God, yes. It's like, how old were they?
Oh, my God. Like Jeff Lynne was like 41.
Oh, Jesus.
Yeah, it's just brutal.
Yeah.
Oh, God. You're like, no.
And yeah, especially that because like they were the oldest band alive.
Their whole thing was being the old man band.
I guess Orbison was old, but
yeah.
Yeah, he passed away sadly
during
the middle of that. So.
That's right. Yeah, he did. Oh, God.
Oh, man. Yeah, I have seen that. That'll age you. Or when you see, the other one that gets me is when you see the fucking Nirvana baby now. Every like few years, someone will post the Nirvana baby from the cover of Nevermind.
Yeah, and he's like, what, 40
or
something?
I don't even know. It's just ridiculous.
Yeah, he's
– Well, I guess that came out in what, like 91-ish or 92?
I think it was 92, maybe 91.
All right, so
– Fuck.
Yeah, do the math.
There you go. It's 25. Huh?
Yeah. Wait, yeah.
Is that right?
Something like that.
Okay.
What year? No,
26.
Yeah.
Damn it. Wait. No.
Well, no, it's –
24. What year is it?
It's he would be it's 2019. He would be 17 or 18, right?
It's 21.
Oh, no, 91?
91.
Okay, so 17 or 18 plus 10.
Yeah.
So 26 or 27.
There you go. Okay.
God damn it, man.
Damn
I'm the worst at math.
I'm horrible.
Just everyone knows that, though. So
yeah.
So he was 30. That same year, interestingly, I didn't realize The Howling and Wolfen both were released.
I remember that.
So it was like a big werewolf year.
Mm-hmm.
And this was a movie that I was not allowed to see at 10 years old in the theater.
Neither was I.
Which I was. But I remember seeing it on VHS probably 3 years later or so,
mm-hmm.
when I was finally like ingesting as much of that content as I could,
right.
at friends' houses.
Yeah.
And I remember just being like, it was a big deal movie.
Yeah.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
It was, I think it grossed like $35 million or so,
mm-hmm.
Which was a lot of dough back then. But for what it was, it seemed like culturally in the zeitgeist, it was an important film.
Yeah. And it was different than anything. It had
way
that,
different.
You know, it's like the fact that Landis could pull off the Blues Brothers,
mm-hmm.
which is an insanely large scope of a movie.
Yeah.
You know, everything that's going on, all the music, how funny it is. I mean, just a billion moving parts.
Yeah.
But then you have this smaller movie that's scary, but, you know, arguably as funny.
Yeah.
As Blues Brothers.
It's about equal parts, it feels like. Mm-hmm. Like scary and funny.
Yeah. And it is genuinely scary.
I'd forgotten that until last night,
mm-hmm.
when I was sitting there in the dark a little bit scared. And I was like, man, some of this shit is pretty brutal.
The underground scene.
Yeah.
With the guy.
Yeah, yeah,
all
yeah.
by himself.
Uh-huh.
Man.
I remember that's burned in my brain. Some of the images from this movie are just so burned in my brain from when I was a kid.
Mm-hmm.
Like just like iconic images.
And it makes – it was that thing that I hate it when there's – I think everyone hates it when it's like a movie like or a story cheats. It was all a dream.
Right, you know? Sure.
And one of my big things about werewolves is that it's not a wolf. It's this scary wolf man monster.
Yeah.
It's so big. It's a monster. It's like that thing.
Yeah.
You know, I did Joe Rogan's podcast, and he has the American Werewolf, the like – the thing.
Oh, yeah. Like a recreation?
Or
the real thing?
One of them. One of the things they used, I think, or something.
Well,
so it's like snarling.
Joe Rogan money. He could probably buy the real thing.
Probably owns the real one that they moved around. I don't know. But it's like, Jesus, that thing's
so
scary. How
big is the one he has?
It doesn't – you know, that one – there's no way that that's as big as mm-hmm. the real one was. But just that the reflection
mm-hmm.
as the thing is coming toward you, just see it and the reflected against the
metal, in the tube scene
yeah for just an instant and you're
yeah.
oh my god
yeah there's
so that's uh-huh. what he saw running down the coming around the corner that was like as big as a car
well and the way they play that scene is so great that that ground level POV shot with it looks like some sort of a fisheye lens or something. It was just so smart because they had to dole out the like the special effects we'll talk about. They super stand up, I think.
Yeah, they do.
But they still had to dole out in bits and pieces or it would look dumb.
Mm-hmm.
And Landis knew that.
Yeah.
So I just think that was a really smart approach in that scene, especially is that POV shot was as scary as like seeing the thing.
Yeah. Well, exactly. I mean, your imagination is just wondering what's coming. And just there's that thing that is – Where you hear something far away that's mm-hmm. coming, without a doubt for you.
Yeah,
you know the that perfect uh-huh. wolf howl.
Yeah.
From somewhere.
Yeah, which you hear the first time when they are in the moors, they're told to avoid.
Of course.
And that great line when they say avoid the or stay on the road, and they look down, and David Naughton goes, "Oops." There's just so many great moments. Like Griffin Dunn is just he's one of my favorites anyway. And I forgot he was like 26 years old in this movie.
Yeah,
and just so great.
Just hi, David.
Yeah,
just face rotting, so good.
And all that was just burned in my brain too. Like being a kid, and I had seen nothing like that where they had something so gory. Played for laughs.
Yeah.
Or just played straight.
Mm-hmm.
And it's easy now. Like, this is all pre-Sam Raimi and pre-like any of that stuff that I think it influenced.
Yeah.
And it's easy to look back now and be like, yeah, that kind of happens all the time in movies.
Yeah, it was.
But it did not back then.
No, it was so visceral and so, you know, he's changing into a force of pure evil.
Yeah.
His dreams are evil.
Jeez.
You know,
yeah, we can talk about the dreams.
Oh my God, that's probably the most disturbing scene of the movie.
The Nazi monster.
Nazis just shooting the family, yeah. Machine gunning them.
It's, what the fuck
and,
is that all
and
about?
Like, they have monster faces. Yeah. They're not people. Yeah.
It's genuinely disturbing.
Yeah.
And it's like an assault on the senses, the sound,
mm-hmm.
and it's quick cut. I keep saying this very Sam Raimi, but Sam Raimi, I guess, was very John Landis.
Absolutely. Yeah.
But yeah, it's an assault on the senses. And I was like genuinely disturbed last night.
Yeah. No, I mean, it's
in that scene.
I appreciate it. You getting disturbed for this. But it's I feel like it's just like, you know, timing is everything, not just comedy, but horror as well. And Landis knew that. And, you know, it's like one of the my favorite examples of perfect timing and just how you just cut the fat is like Inspector Clouseau, where he's like,
oh, yeah.
I will pose as a painter, and he sets the paintings up in front and wait for him. And just a cop walks up. You have a permit for these? Permit? Woo-wee! He's arrested immediately. There's just a siren going on a car that is driving him to jail.
Yeah.
Like, he's arrested so fast. Uh-huh. We don't see him arrested. And it's just that thing with, like, you know, they're walking on. They look down there on the moors.
Yeah.
Whoops. What it jumped. You know,
right.
Just monster just right away.
Yeah,
just
out of
tearing
nowhere.
At him.
The speed at which it happens.
Awful.
Yeah. And not to get too sidetracked, but I did, as a child, think Inspector Clouseau was probably the funniest thing I'd ever seen in my life.
It is so good.
I just ate that shit up, man.
Yeah.
I could not get enough.
It's perfect silliness.
Perfect silliness.
Perfect silliness. Just his
– oh, man, it was so good.
His house man just supposed to attack him.
Yeah.
And he always attacked him so insanely, just screaming,
just
kicking a door in. Horrifying.
I remember the one thing that I think I probably laughed at for like an hour straight when I was, you know, 9 years old was – I don't know if you remember the bit in one of them where he was upstairs and they had a set of parallel bars right next to a staircase. Yeah. And he was like, in college, you know, I was quite the athlete or something like that. And he jumped on there and does a couple of swings and then does his dismount on the stairwell side and just disappears. And all you hear is the Clouseau fall. I thought he and Tim Conway were like RIP. We're like the funniest people on the planet.
Yeah, because it was a person who assuming a level of expertise just because they're an adult.
Yeah, and it appealed to a 9-year old
no
sensibility.
None. Yeah.
All right. Well, back to the film, though.
All
so,
right.
Yeah, they get attacked very early on,
yeah.
And Jack gets mauled to death,
mm-hmm.
just brutally. And like when he goes back to him, you know, he runs away. David runs away and then comes right back. And it's just – I forget how gory it was.
Yeah.
He really went for it.
Yeah, he did. And it's not – it's like he's getting attacked by a wild animal.
Yeah.
Because he is, you know. And I think we – like, love the whole, you know, it's funny, back to Kyle, but Kyle has that bit about where you get your ghost gig if you're
uh-huh.
a ghost.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Headless knight. There's a castle.
Right.
There you go. This is perfect.
Right.
You know.
Uh-huh.
OD in the bathtub. You know, what you get this studio apartment full of roaches. You know, it's like how you don't find
– yeah.
We don't have – not a lot of, not a lot of modern American ghosts in like new condos and things. It's
right.
all everything old and stuff. So when you go back to that level of old English authenticity with
yeah.
a wolf literally painted on the wall.
Yeah.
And these people are just like,
the yep, slaughtered lamb.
There's one out there. Yes, the slaughtered lamb.
Yeah.
There's one out there. And we have this symbol that uh-huh. wards it off.
Yeah.
You know,
well,
like,
that's one of the funniest.
We don't talk to people.
That's one of the funniest lines is – They finally get everyone sort of in a gregarious mood after, like, the needle scratches off the record when they enter.
Yeah.
And everyone's laughing after the story that guy tells. And Griffin Dunne is one of the best deliveries. Like, over the cacophony of laughter,
yeah.
he goes, I think I even have it written down here. He goes, excuse me, what's that star on the wall for? And
yeah.
then it just goes deadly silent again. Just like one of the great,
like
funny lines.
They had rapport, and you threw it in the trash.
Oh, man. They were there.
Yeah.
And then they get thrown out. Beware the moon. That was also a pretty funny line from
yeah.
that scene, too. He's like, beware the moon?
It's
like,
yeah.
like, what is going on here?
Yeah.
And just that whole – like the setup is so like evocative, like that the whole beginning credits is like just shots of the countryside
uh-huh.
and the moors, and it just
yeah.
looks like a Led Zeppelin album,
uh-huh.
you know,
yeah.
in all the creepiest ways.
Yeah, because I mean, you go to like those areas of England, like the Cotswolds and stuff. It's It's great. Beautiful, but it's creepy.
It is so
in
creepy.
In a best possible way. It's like when I was a kid and we'd go to the Oregon coast and it was all just, you know, now it's much more developed. It's like old, just old wind swept.
Yeah, fog, you know, and rocks.
Rained out old houses. And just like, I remember reading a book about like a cult that lived, like a horror novel about a cult that like would sacrifice people to the sea in a little small town. And I was like, oh, that could happen here. That could really happen.
Right.
So like.
But then you just watch The Goonies to cleanse your palate.
There you go. Perfect.
Wasn't that Oregon?
Yeah. Yeah, it was. Astoria.
So that, you know, he starts having all these dreams, which are just completely fucked up. He gets in the relationship with, to me, at, you know, 13 years old, the most beautiful nurse I'd ever seen in my life.
Absurdly gorgeous.
Yeah. It was just one of those things, like, as a 12-year-old. And, you know, it's like he kisses her and they immediately she's like, well, why don't you just come and move in with me?
Yeah, yeah, right.
Okay. And I thought that's how it worked.
Sure.
You know? and we get a great cameo from Frank Oz as the ambassador.
Yeah.
From the United States. And it occurred to me he's so funny and, like, he should have been in more movies as an actor.
Yeah.
He had little bits here and there, but he was really great.
He was. I think he made a couple.
Yeah.
Before, but, like, I never really checked him out, you know.
Yeah, I mean, he did his cameos here and there. And, of course, all the Muppet stuff, you know, those are movies that he was in technically. But I just thought he was so funny as a character actor.
Absolutely. One prophylactic, used.
I haven't done that one yet. I have it earmarked for a guest, though. So,
oh, nice.
That'll be soon.
That's a, yeah.
But I did see where Landis, he was going to cast Belushi and Aykroyd in this part and decided not to because it was just off the heels of Blues Brothers.
Yeah.
He actually had written, he'd sat on this for a while. He wrote the script when he was 19, which is kind of great.
That's amazing.
And held on to it for 10 or 11 years. Got super famous through Animal House, obviously, and Blues Brothers, and then was able to come back to this and was going to cast those guys.
Wow.
And I just, like, can't imagine this movie with them.
No. I think it would have taken you out of it, you know, with the fact that he cast—
For sure.
Pretty relative unknown guys. Unknowns, but they're both really good.
Yeah.
They're both, you know, I think—
David Naughton's best role, you know?
It's
got to be.
Totally. Yeah, and he served it really well. He's he's a normal guy.
Uh-huh.
He's a 20-something guy.
Yeah.
You know, that's just, hey, I'm just in Europe kind of figuring out life. I'm kind of a big goofy guy.
Yeah.
Good looking, but, you know, not a jerk. And
yeah.
And his existential wrestling match where it's just, if you keep living, you're going to keep killing people.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like, you know, it's kind of a corollary to addiction,
mm-hmm.
where it's like you got to stop. But in his case, it's like you got to stop living. So,
yeah,
and I don't know many of us that would be able to do that. Just kill ourselves.
That's the central crux of the film, which I kind of forgot.
Yeah.
But Griffin Dunne, Jack, when he comes back, he visits him three times, I think. Always very famously in a further state of deterioration.
Yeah.
But on that very first visit, he sets the stakes.
Yeah.
And he's like, man, you got to kill yourself.
Uh-huh.
And partially because you can't go around killing people, but he also has that great line about the afterlife and how boring it is. And he's like, I want you here with me, buddy. But he resists that. Obviously, you can't just go out and kill yourself right away. Like, he resists that and doesn't start thinking about that until after the first killing spree.
Yeah.
Which, he lets happen.
Yeah.
And John Landis lets it happen in a brutal way.
Yeah, absolutely. And I love how the British woman is still polite to him.
Right.
Hello. Like the husband is very cross.
Yeah.
The wife is just still. It's like the timing of comedy when it'll just be like, oh, they're having an evening. This couple. What's outside?
Like
it just attacks.
He takes his scotch out there, and it's like he's done.
Yep, that's it.
Yeah, and that. We might as well talk about the first change scene. There's two change scenes.
Yeah.
When that first full moon hits, and again, it's so fast. Like he's just sort of sitting there.
Yep.
And then all of a sudden he gets up and starts ripping his shirt off.
When he starts screaming.
Like yeah.
His brain hurts.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I think one thing that really helped convey it was, the visuals are amazing from Rick Baker, but the sound of the bones like breaking and the skin stretching.
Yeah.
And he's in so much pain.
Yeah.
And I don't know if you see that a lot in like werewolf changes.
No, that was a new thing. And that was Landis. I saw him talking about that. He's like, I always thought, wouldn't it really hurt?
Yeah.
And that was the thing. You know, you talked about seeing it on VHS. I saw it too when I was very young. And that scene ruined the whole movie for me. I didn't remember anything else about the movie.
Yeah.
I was just like, God damn it. Like, that was so disturbing.
Yeah.
And so awful that
And mind-blowing.
Yeah.
For
you know
a
what?
Kid.
You know what? To be honest, I don't think I saw it until I was like late adolescence
uh-huh.
because I had seen – there was a movie that we used to watch called Terror in the Isles.
Yes, dude.
That was all clips.
I saw that and it showed that bit.
And it just talks about horror and it showed that part. Uh-huh. And in my head I was like, well, I can't see that movie.
I think I might have had the same experience of seeing that first.
Because it's just – there's nothing more disturbing, especially for someone who's going – you know, probably through puberty,
right.
than like body horror. You know, body horror is the worst.
I never thought about that.
I remember seeing like The Fly with Jeff Goldblum and being like, fuck,
this
is so awful.
Uh-huh.
You know.
I never made that puberty connection, but mm-hmm. I bet that's why
I mean, I think that's just armchair psychology. I think it just serves you any age, because that is just the scariest imaginable thing.
Yeah.
Some of your body changing.
Right.
Infer the worst and you can't help it. But yeah, I just remember that being, the noises of, oh God, yeah.
Yeah, and it's, that was also something that even before I saw it was, like the kids who had more permissible parents, like there was a lot of lunchroom table talk about that scene
uh-huh.
and what was going on.
Yeah.
And the image, two from that change scene really burned in my brain. One is the great shot of him looking at his hand growing.
Yeah. That's the famous
and then
one.
The other one is the shot of when his eyes finally turn yellow. And they do this a few times in the movie. They have that POV shot where he looks directly into camera.
Yeah.
He's kind of like reaching toward it.
Uh-huh.
And it's just so fucked up.
Yeah. So fucked up.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Good stuff.
Yeah.
The ears growing, the hair growing, the fingernails.
The face elongating.
Oh, yeah.
The hind legs turning into dog legs.
Yes.
Ooh.
And the feet.
Woof.
Yeah. It's good stuff. And it really does hold up.
Yeah.
I was trying to imagine how they would do it now, and supposedly Max Landis, his son, is going to remake it, which, you know, for better or for worse, at least it's his son, and he'll probably do it justice.
Yeah, I don't know, man.
But
I'm not a huge fan of Max Landis and what I've seen.
Oh, well.
It's fine.
Yeah.
It's like, you know, and look, I'm sure there are people that, like, they don't like John Landis' stuff, but they
right.
like Max's. That's
yeah.
all. But,
no, I got you.
You know.
I was trying to imagine how they would do it today and how not as good it will be.
Right.
The change scene.
Yeah. And I just feel like it perfectly exists in the era where everything was on film
mm-hmm.
and it shot a certain way. And I think it worked perfectly. And it's just like it's almost like, I hate to use the term, but like a perfect B film.
Mm-hmm. It is.
And because it's so outrageous, because it's so absolutely insane.
Yeah.
But that's the only reason I would call it a B film at all. But it's just so enjoyable from beginning to end. And like
yeah.
even the ending where he's dead in the alley. Bah,
yeah.
bah, 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 bah.
Yeah.
Come on.
Well, music plays such a big part because he used
huge part, yeah.
Bad Moon Rising and all the moon songs, a little on the nose. But
yeah.
he used popular music to great effect, I think.
Yes.
And for a mainstream film, though, the violence and the way they shoot these attack scenes and
right.
then that whole – batshit ending in Piccadilly Circus.
Yeah. Oh.
Starting in the movie theater in the second change.
So good.
For a mainstream movie, it is just bonkers.
Yeah. Oh, it's insane. And that scene is hilarious.
It is.
It's so effed up, but it's so
almost
hilarious.
Slapstick in some ways.
Yeah. I mean,
how fast it comes.
The fact that they're all like, what's inside there? And the door is just banging, banging, banging.
Uh-huh.
And they're just like curious. And it comes out and just immediately rips the dude's head off.
Oh my
and
God.
Throws the head into the street. And
yeah.
the guy's wife is like,
it's like the police chief, I think.
Yeah. Like just, and the woman next to him is just like, wow.
Yeah.
Which makes a perfect, they took off his head in front of me face. And then people
clearly
start running.
Some art department guy like threw the head
yes.
from off camera.
Yeah. And they're running and they're getting killed by cars.
Oh, yeah.
To avoid the werewolf. Like the
– Left and right.
Left and right. The double-decker bus hits a thing and a guy flies out the top and gets run over.
Uh-huh.
A guy who's just like reading a paper and now he's dead.
Yeah. They smash a cop between two cars.
Yep. Yep.
I had forgotten how nuts that scene was.
It's it just keeps cutting back to the wolf just looking around.
Yeah.
Trying to find someone to kill, but they're killing themselves.
Yeah. And
to
it,
run away from him.
And it also felt a little bit like you could feel David in there a little bit as the confused wolf.
Yeah.
And he because he was – it felt like a – like if you had let a mean dog out in front of – and with 1,000 hysterical people.
Right.
Like it wouldn't just be – it would also be scared.
Uh-huh.
And not just attacking people.
Yeah.
And you get the sense that he is a little scared.
Yeah, he is. He's confused by all the noises and all these – you know, it's still just – it's – you know, in the end, it's still a wild animal.
Right.
You know?
I mean,
supernatural.
Yeah.
But, like, still, it's not like this – werewolf mastermind.
Right, right.
Put on a three-piece suit and drive away.
But, I mean, it was England and they all, I guess in London, they were a little less like the people in the moors who all like totally believed this shit.
Right, sure.
Because they had seen it.
Yeah.
But it's still, I was amazed at the amount of people like in when they were, like you said, when they were gathered around when the cops are trying to hold him back from getting out of the movie theater and everyone's just sort of standing around trying to get a look. It's like, get the fuck out of there. What are you doing?
Yeah, something's pounding on these doors hard enough to move.
From inside of a porn theater, too.
Yeah.
So, like, that couldn't be good.
No, no. Yeah.
Even if it's just some dude. and, you know, it kind of ends. I thought for a little while, seeing it last night, because it had been a while, that I couldn't remember exactly how it ended. And he introduces the idea in the middle that only a werewolf can only be killed by someone who loves him. So I thought she might end up killing him.
Oh.
But she kind of does in a way.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, she's trying to save him.
Right.
And somehow they managed to shoot past her down that alley. I didn't ask too many questions about that part.
Uh-huh.
But I was when I saw the wide shot, I was like, wait a minute. It's like, how the fuck did they shoot him 3 times?
Yeah.
She's like standing right in front of him. Mm-hmm. But that's just one of those things you have to let go, I think.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it's – yeah, but it is, I never thought about that, that they, I forgot that you have to – like that was one way he could die or something.
Yeah. And I mean, it kind of ends the only way that movie can end because he has to die.
Yeah.
But you don't think – like I never got the sense that he was going to take his own life.
No. I don't know how you would put that in a movie where it's like – you know, it's that, I don't even know how I would – how I would kill myself.
No, it would have to end this way.
Yeah.
And the love story, I mean, it is a – it's very famous for being a mix of genres with a comedy and horror, but there's also a love story in there and a bit of a romance with the nurse. And I think people – I think Landis had talked about people being disappointed that she was not able to save him. Like in that moment, that's sort of in a movie usually where she's able to talk to him and he changes back into David.
Right.
And she throws herself up and is like, see, he's just a man. We're going to work this out.
Uh-huh.
But he doesn't do that. He kills him and it's like cut to black immediately.
That's it.
With, you know, whatever, the Blue Moon song.
Yeah. Yeah.
great film.
Yeah, so good.
I don't know. I'm trying to see if I have anything else. Griffin Dunne is a puppet at the end in the third installment.
Right. Well, he's basically a skeleton.
Yeah, he's gone so far they just have a puppet in his voice, which is kind of fun.
Yeah.
Yeah, I got nothing else. It's very, very sort of a punk rock movie after making something like Blues Brothers.
Yeah, I think that's what I love about it, that it isn't anything but what it is, and it's just done perfectly.
Yeah.
You know, that's hard for any genre, but I think especially horror because it gets written off so much. But it's just a great story. And I was always – when I was a kid, the first books I read were horror novels and I'm still a huge fan of it when it's done well.
Right.
And when people try to press me and go, well, what's that mean? I'm like, I know it when I see it. You know, it's so hard to say.
It's like pornography.
Right. Or art. Yeah. I just feel like that is a perfect horror movie. You know, for what it is.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, and just so influential. Like there would be no Raimi or Shaun of the Dead or like anything that followed if this hadn't laid the groundwork.
Yeah. The not that horror movies have to have humor in them, but all the ones that I love,
they're better when they do.
They have even if they just have a touch.
Uh-huh.
Like The Thing.
Right.
Is not which I think another it is another perfect horror movie.
Yeah.
It's not – there's no funny parts except for you got to be fucking kidding when the head grows legs. Just that part.
Yeah, that line and then off this fucking couch or what does he say? Or tied to this fucking chair.
Yeah.
That's another pretty funny
line. That's a good one.
No, but you're right. Like it's tough to do something just straight disturbing horror unless that's really your aim. Mm-hmm. This is just really freak people out and mind fuck them.
Well, and I feel like a lot of times the humor is just people being human.
Right.
You're just portraying how people actually act in those situations.
Which would be, you got to be fucking kidding me.
Like how much of this shit, you know.
But like a Hereditary, I don't remember any jokes in that.
No. There wasn't one.
There wasn't anything funny about that movie, was there?
I heard so much about it. It's just disturbing. It's not scary. It's more disturbing than anything.
Yeah.
Blah, blah. And so when I finally watched it, I was just ready to be like, I probably will not like this. Uh-huh. I think because of that, I found a lot to like about it.
Yeah.
You know? But yeah, you're right.
Yeah.
Not one. Oh, boy.
Nothing light.
That guy really likes getting you down.
Yeah. I enjoyed it. I mean, as much as you can say you enjoyed something like that.
Yeah, I think it was a good horror movie.
Yeah.
For sure. But yeah, that really was –
yeah,
like made you uncomfortable.
Yeah,
in a lot of ways.
Yeah, I'm a big fan of the like what Jordan Peele's doing though and stuff like that.
Oh my god, yeah,
just really good.
Because
you can do a horror film that's still super entertaining and fun.
Yeah, and still
that's
have
what I like.
The overwhelming sense of dread.
Yeah,
that you got to have
absolutely
for it to be in that genre.
Yeah,
you know.
All right, Matt, we finished with five questions.
Okay.
Let's see if I can remember them. I usually write them down, but I didn't. So number one is, what's the first movie you remember seeing in the theater?
Does a drive-in count?
Anything counts.
Okay, probably Star Wars, but I don't really remember it. I was in footy pajamas in the way back of my parents'
station wagon sure.
Pinto. And I remember, like, the sand guys.
Yeah, Tusken Raiders and
the Tusken Raiders.
The
things
they
rode. Big animals they had.
There's so many Star Wars fans angry at us right now.
Yeah, they're furious.
I think they were called.
I was about to say Tauntaun, but I know that's Empire.
I know, yeah.
No.
I think they're called Hairy Elephants.
Yeah, okay. Yes. Yeah. Space Mastodons.
Banta.
Is it Bantas?
I think so.
Okay, so I saw the Bantas and I freaked out and I jumped in the way back because I thought those were real animals. And I was I remember that's all I remember about Star Wars the first time I saw it. I was like, no.
Yeah.
And I'm sure I watched the whole thing, but like that was so just disturbing to me.
Yeah.
That's my first memory.
That's funny. One of my first memories at a movie was a drive-in. And it was that deal, like same with you, like parents would just throw you in the car because that's what you did back then.
Right.
It's not like we're going to take Matt to go see Star Wars.
Yeah.
It's like we're going to go see Star Wars and you'll sleep. And my parents did that with Blazing Saddles. I went and saw Blazing Saddles.
Nice.
And the only thing I remember as a kid is what's his name punching out the horse.
Oh, yeah.
Because that's like something – I think I remember waking up and seeing Mongo punch out a horse.
Hilarious.
All right. Number two is first R-rated movie, home or theater.
That's tough. What first R-rated movie?
Well, were your parents letting you watch the stuff? I think you said around my age too, probably 10 or 11, 12.
I think so. But it's – God, that's tough to say. I remember I saw might have been Cinema 21 or a screening at my mom taught at Portland State. There's a screening of Suburbia,
not the
Bogosian one.
Uh-huh.
It's a movie about punk rock bands
that
live together in a house. And there's a scene where they tear off a girl's clothes and like put rats on her and scream at her. It's not like assault, but it is.
Yeah.
It's just not sexually intentioned assault. Mm-hmm. It's just like, they're treating her like it was really disturbing.
Yeah.
And there's a scene. This movie opens with a woman, her car breaks down. She walks to a payphone off the highway.
Uh-huh.
They used to have those. And she's got her toddler and a dog runs over and kills the kid.
Oh, my God. Because
it's a big thread through the movie are these roving pack of dogs. And I remember after the movie, like my mother's students were like chastising her for bringing me to this movie.
Wow.
Me and my friend Eli.
Uh-huh.
But we were just like, whoa, like this is messed up. But we weren't like, oh, my, I'm horribly scarred.
Yeah.
But it does, I remember that movie very clearly.
Yeah, it's so funny how that stuff just locks in.
Dark.
What I love about those stories is there's probably like 100 people listening that are like, oh, shit, I totally saw that movie.
Absolutely.
And I remember that now.
There are people that just jump out because that was probably, definitely early 80s. So it was like the early 80s punk rock scene. So a lot of people that were into that music went and saw that movie.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
And it built an audience for sure.
All right. Number three is – I think I usually tailor number three to the guest. So we'll go with who would – in a comedy buddy movie, who would be your – in any era, who would be your dream buddy movie partner?
I can just pick any
– Anybody.
Anybody? Madeline Kahn. I'll throw Madeline Kahn in there.
Wow.
As
God,
kind
she's
of
great.
Like the older kind of mentor uh-huh. in some kind of way.
Yeah, perfect.
You know, like we're buddies because we work together at like a Kinko's or something. You know, something like that.
Yeah. Boy, she was funny.
Oh my God.
One of the best.
Yeah.
Number four.
Yeah.
Will you walk out of a bad movie?
Really rarely, mm-hmm. but I did walk out of the Ralph Fiennes and Uma Thurman Avengers.
Yeah, that movie sucked.
I was halfway through it and I was like, there's nothing in this that I even give a crap about.
That's
and
pretty
you
bad.
You are pandering to being weird. And
yeah.
With no sense of any kind of – like it's like I'll watch superhero movies and be like superhero – the idea – and I'm a huge comic book fan.
Mm-hmm.
But the idea of a superhero is dumb.
Mm-hmm.
Like who's Batman going to fight? The Crips?
Right.
We don't have gangs like they have in those movies.
Right.
Definitely Christopher Nolan
uh-huh.
came as close as you could possibly come.
Right.
But even that Gotham is ridiculously fantasy-ish.
Yeah, yeah.
Does not exist.
Right.
Nothing in that exists and can't in our world,
uh-huh.
you know. So – and but I will kind of – so I'll you know you suspend a certain amount of belief
mm-hmm.
for like you know even the Avengers you think of when you say the Avengers
right
that first movie I loved it
mm-hmm.
but there's no way those seven people mm-hmm. were holding off an army in Manhattan no way two of them are just people
yeah
assassins I don't care these monsters are coming from space shooting lasers you're not holding your own
yeah
no way
yeah
unless you're all Hulks
right
the end. You know,
but you need like 100 Hulks still.
Yeah, five Hulks and a Thor.
Yeah,
might do it. You know, but I'll still suspend it. But that movie didn't even give me a reason to care
right.
about anything. It just was just weird for weird's sake.
Yeah, it was no good.
No, I couldn't care.
If you're walking out on an Uma Thurman film too, mm-hmm. then it's pretty bad.
Yeah, she's done great stuff.
Yeah,
Ralph Fiennes, an amazing actor.
Sure,
but
yeah, that was a stinker.
Oh my God.
All right, number five. Finally, what's your movie going ritual? When you go to movies, where do you sit? What do you like to eat?
I usually sit near the back. Because
you're tall?
Also, I just like – I don't like a lot of people behind me,
okay.
I guess. But also because I'm tall.
Right.
It's just – I think that just started when I was younger from being – you know, growing up or growing tall fast.
Uh-huh.
But I'll always get – if I'm going to eat something, I'll always get popcorn and a bottle of water.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I get.
Yeah.
You know, I never get soda.
Yeah, same here.
Used to, but it just – it's, you know.
Yeah.
Soda's so bad.
I know. You're not 13.
It's a treat, but it's not one I have to have, you know.
I'll get a root beer like twice a year.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, oh, man, this is so delicious.
Oh, God. I love it. Just drinking fizzy candy.
Yeah, it always cracks me up when I see adults, though, that just plow through sodas
yep.
like they were 12 years old.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just like, how can you do that?
Yeah. Yeah, well, it's funny. I remember I was with a friend and seeing like kids coming back from school like with Starbucks cups. And mm-hmm. I'm like, are they a little young to be drinking coffee? And my friend was like, how many Cokes did you drink? And I'm like, good point.
It's true. It's
good point.
About the same thing.
You
huh?
know?
Yeah.
And probably better that they're drinking
right.
coffee. You know?
Yeah. Yeah.
Better like, for you.
Sustainably sourced, like nice coffee is probably way better for you than a Coke.
Oh, yeah. Coca-Cola is like the worst. You know, it's like eating Frosted Flakes every day. It's so bad for you.
All right, man. Thanks a lot.
Thank you, man.
This was a lot of fun.
It was great.
All right, everyone. I hope you enjoyed that. It was very kind of Matt to literally fly in and come kind of straight here and record this with me and then kind of go straight over to the comedy venue. It's a lot to ask of someone. It was very kind of Matt to do so. He's a good guy that way. So I hope you enjoyed that. If you haven't seen An American Werewolf in London in a while, go check it out. It is one of the great, great films of the early 1980s and just set so many trends moving forward. Very, very important film. And again, check out Matt's stand-up special on Amazon Prime, finally live in Portland. I guarantee you will enjoy it. And big thanks to Matt for coming in. And until next time, everyone, stay on the road and avoid the moors and beware the moon. We'll be right back. Movie Crush is produced, edited, and engineered by Ramsey Yunt here in our home studio at Pont City Market, Atlanta, Georgia, for iHeartRadio.
For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.